Good morning. Welcome to Down to Brass Tacks for this Monday, the 27th day of April 2020. I'm David Ellis and I'll be with you up until 2 o'clock. Call us at 43417 and you can also send your WhatsApp messages to us. Welcome to the program. Let's take the first person on the line this morning. Hello.
Hello, good morning.
Yes, good morning.
Hi, David. I want to raise an issue that is of great concern to the parents of Class 4W at the Wilkie Cumberbatch Primary School. What we have been made to understand is that the Ministry of Education has chosen at this time to transfer the class teacher of this class 4 to another primary school. We understand that the teacher sent an email to all the parents, and then we had an online meeting with the principal of the school last Wednesday, and they have confirmed that Mrs. Bascom is going to be transferred. Our main concern, obviously, is that we are in a period of time with the COVID-19 pandemic where there have been several changes. School came out abruptly. The children at this point, we don't know when school will resume. These are children who Mrs. Bascom has been teaching since class 3. So she took them from straight through class 3 and into class 4. Obviously preparing for the common entrance exam. So we are at a loss, really, as to why the ministry would think it best to add to the disruption. And certainly hearing from some of the parents, the children are, some of them have even used words such as like traumatized. The parents, the children are confused. They don't understand why they will not be going back to the class teacher. We are asking them to get used to online teaching. We are asking them to prepare for common interest exam that we don't know when it is going to happen. And then we're asking them to get used to a new teacher who they probably will never meet in person. We don't know how this is going to go. We've tried to, some of the parents have sent letters to the Ministry of Education, to the Minister of Education. We know that the teachers' union has been asked to make representation on the teachers' behalf. But our main concern this morning, David, is really, it just seems, there's nothing about that seems well thought out or reasonable. The ministry has not responded to any of the letters that the parents have written. The principal of the school at the meeting that we had on Wednesday did tell us that the management team from the school, they had appealed to the ministry to ask them if they could perhaps delay the move. The teacher herself, she's not requested a transfer from the school, certainly not at this time. In fact, she had asked them if perhaps they could wait until the next school year and then make that transfer. And the ministry has, as far as we've been told, has said it's a done deal. She received this call on Good Friday, which is what we've been told. On Good Friday, she received the call saying not that she was being transferred or not that it was being thought about, but that she had been transferred to the school. And we think that, if nothing else, the Ministry of Education should at least, if not just acknowledge, respond, because the parents and the children, we are viable stakeholders in the process. So I understand that this may be an employer-employee situation. But certainly, you must be able to consider to a great degree how this is going to affect the children in that class at this time.
Well, you acknowledge that it is an employer-employee situation, which means that they may very well be faced with some delicate issue that it may be difficult to discuss with others. I don't know what the details are, but I am fully appreciative of the fact that sometimes in these relationships, the employer can find themselves in a situation where it is not appropriate to discuss the details of whatever might have triggered the decision. However, if you all have written to the various, the ministry and the minister, then at a minimum, they should acknowledge receipt and should indicate to you whether they consider this matter to be at such a delicate stage or such a delicate matter that they prefer not to say more at this stage. While you are discussing the plight of the children in that class, across Barbados, there is a big problem. We are in lockdown. Students are being encouraged to go online to study. Many of the children in primary schools in this country are not in a position to respond to that particular request. In addition, we can see that the teachers are themselves not yet ready, and they in turn are accusing the ministry of not being ready. So we have, in this particular area, it appears as though there is some degree of chaos as it relates to how exactly Barbados is going to respond to the challenge, because truth be told, we are way behind where we perhaps expected to be at this stage where the technology is concerned in the schools. Not every child has a tablet, not every child has access to a computer, and not every child has access to Wi-Fi. So we are appearing, from what I'm seeing and hearing, it seems as though we are in some state of confusion. If you look at what has been said in the newspaper today by the Barbados Union of Teachers, you hear quite clearly that they are saying that they're getting mixed signals from the Ministry of Education, but the casualties would be the children, many of whom are supposed to be taking exams not too long from now.
That's why we don't understand, David. Why add to that? Why add to the term officially?
Doesn't it depend, though, upon what the real issue is, that which you has not been discussed with you?
Well,
and that issue could relate to something personal. It could also relating to the teacher, or alternatively, you can find that there is some situation that they face on the other side of the coin at the other school that they consider to be pressing. I mean, I understand your concern that as parents, you think the timing is difficult, and it is not the best. But I could only encourage the Ministry of Education to handle this matter in a way that would at least give you all as parents some sense of direction as to what has happened here, as best as they can. Because as I said, it may well be considered to be too delicate to share with members of the public.
Yeah, I would really like them to just please communicate and do not. It seems as though we've been dismissed, and I don't think it is. I understand that several things are going on and different people are wearing different hats, but there must be somebody in the Ministry of Education, whether they've been delegated or who should be made to understand that this is a real concern. These are children, and they ought not to be pawns, or they ought not to be to bear the brunt, however delicate the situation is. Consideration.
But having said that, in all fairness, a lot depends. There are so many different things that could be at work here. And to say that the children are not to be used as pawns and that sort of thing, I mean...
So understand that in the absence of information or dialogue or communication...
I agree.
We can only go from our experience and our perspective. So the ministry should have some kind of dialogue with the parents. That's what we've been asking for.
Well, I've supported that. Basically what I've said here, it supports the need, the desire to have that kind of dialogue as best as they can. But as I also respect the fact that there could be issues there that may make it more challenging for them to give details. But they must at least give some kind of communication to you. You can't just treat the parents' concerns as though they do not matter.
Exactly.
I agree with that, you know?
Okay.
All right, thanks for drawing it to our attention. Down to Brass Tacks, hello.
Good morning.
Yes, morning.
How are you?
I'm okay, and you?
I'm good for now. What I want to discuss is pest control. Where is the pest control?
Pest?
You know, pest, P-E-S-T, pest control.
Yes.
You know, there are hotels that will be serviced from time to time that will have had, you know, like a German rose infestation. And, you know, they have authorities normally shut them down or want to shut them down if they have German roaches. Now, with the hotels empty now, they're going to get little roaches on the plane. Right? So I believe that pest control operators should be allowed, like, those sort of services to go in and do those work. No person is around to be contaminated. In addition to that, pest control operators wear gloves and masks when they don't work. So the same way you can go around and pick up the sanitary bins that you may use in the different offices, I believe you can go around and do pest control, because they know individuals who have serious termite problems in their roof. And, you know, they call a little before the shutdown and the termites just eating the roof off.
So you're making the case for yet another group to be able to move freely.
Yeah, because pest control operators wear gloves and masks, right?
Okay.
They wear gloves and masks in the execution of their duty.
I must tell you.
And most of the work that is done on the house for termites is done on the outside. 95% is done on the outside. So therefore, you don't have much need to go on the inside. So I believe that kids like those should be able, to do work. Otherwise, when it's COVID-19 then, I mean, a lot of hotels can't open up because they can get a serious roast infestation. Because I know that for sure. Because I work in the field.
Okay.
And the roast infestation play very, very fast. That's all they got to say.
It means you will have a lot more work.
Yeah, no, if hotels not making money, right, because it closed down.
Who's going to pay you?
Who's
going to pay you in the interim?
Wait, who?
The same hotels that aren't making money, they have to pay you.
But if you look at it, right, once the work is done, you will get paid at some point in time. but if you're working again, then the problem not escalate, then you have a big issue. Then let's say I see coconut vendors selling coconuts. Do they fall on the farmers? Because they buy the coconuts, they ain't growing coconut trees and selling coconuts. They're buying coconuts and selling. I have passed it, I even see coconut vendors, hardly got on masks. People cluster around them, hardly got on masks too, buying coconut water.
Well, all I can say to you is, in all of the clamor for the opening up of this and that and the next, I think that we need to take very seriously the development that was spoken of over the weekend, and to recognize that all it takes is one person in the wrong or right place to create a mushrooming of this problem. It doesn't take 5 or 10. It takes one person. And, you know, we need to continue to be cautious. If you look at the road this morning, it looks as though Barbados is going back to normal. It really does look that way. It may well have a lot to do with the recent changes that the government announced with respect to shopping and that sort of thing. But we need to be careful. And, you know, I understand what you are saying. But we also have to recognize that the more people we release out there to do business, the greater the risk.
But for instance, look at Sheraton that closed down recently. But then they come back, because whatever nymph, which is the young roach in there, they're going to be adults and it's not by the plan, so therefore you may get a big infestation in there.
You may, and you may not.
Right?
you just said you may, and you may not. Okay, thank you very much. Down to Brass Tacks. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning. I want to know, right? Which am I? doing, book telling pneumonia.
Personal issue. That doesn't sound like something that you really need to raise in the public domain.
Or let me really explain what you're doing.
Okay.
So, come on, tell pneumonia more leave. So, what happened is that he, this man here is a postman. Tell pneumonia more leave. What should he do with that?
Under what circumstances, I don't know. I mean, to say that he's telling people your name and where you live, under what is the context? Is he delivering mail?
No, I'm not delivering mail.
So is there a personal issue between you and the man?
No, I never get in trouble with him. No, I mean, no problem with that. So. He lives there.
I have heard that already. Now I want to know more about why this becomes a matter for brass tacks. Why? I can't understand why. All right?
Yeah, but...
I cannot understand why. You haven't been able to tell me. I won't give you the chance to speak, though. As long as you can tell me why. Okay? You seem to have a difficulty expressing yourself on that point, though.
I express myself, but this is what he doing.
Why did it? He dislikes you?
No. I didn't see the post, General. I reported downtown. The written a book. The time they get back to me, they never get back to me.
All right, so you feel that the people to whom you reported the matter really should have dealt with it by now?
It's over a year now. And they never call me back. They didn't get back to me.
So the man continues to call your name in the neighborhood?
But he's telling people and people ringing out my name.
And we're ringing out your name? You mean calling your name in the street?
Yeah, he's showing up my name, I think.
Okay.
This thing is going on is more than a year.
So the people down in the neighborhood didn't know you before that?
Huh?
Those people didn't know you before you recently moved down there?
Don't take it. Don't Michael.
All right, sir. I don't know that I can deal with this for you. Thank you very much. Down to brass tacks. You're on the air.
Yes, good morning.
Yes, morning.
Mr. Ellis.
Hi.
Let's look at the testing of the COVID-19. The czar came on and he said that for 6 days nobody was test positive. And then when they came out over the weekend, they said that they had two people from the NAB was tested positive, which brings to five. We never knew about the three before. Can you explain that to me, sir?
I really can't. It is the people who make up the COVID team who should be explaining those things to you.
So it seems that...
So your question is why you didn't hear about the three people before?
Yes, we didn't hear about those three people before. Because they said early on that day.
What would be the consequences of all of that? If you didn't realize that there were three people who had tested positive at the NAB prior to Saturday, when it was officially announced,
mm-hmm.
What does that do to you? I mean, how does it leave you feeling?
No, it gives us a thing that the confidence about having those who are in control and authority. They seem to be a little tardy in their duties.
But how are you sure that when they had told you that other people had tested positive,
mm-hmm.
that they didn't include those three?
They never said that.
Even though they might not have gotten into details and told you, well, these three are from the National Assistance Board, but it doesn't mean that they haven't included those three. Where's the proof?
Let's go back a little further. When early on there was a rumor that frontline worker was tested positive, and they were, you know, it was denied in the same week. You remember that?
I don't recall exactly.
Yeah, it was.
When what was denied? But are you sure that the frontline worker was somebody from the NAB?
It was a friendly worker. They said a friendly worker. They said a friendly worker. And it was denied. Then after, the Minister of Health, when he was questioned on the press conference, he says that somebody was tested, a friendly worker, and he would not go into that, into details. I don't remember that. Do you remember that?
And what is your concern there?
My concern is that we have them. They're not moving in the right direction. They're moving something similar to China. And then we have to look at the if the testing kits have came from China, which were faulty. And a lot of people send them back. We have to wonder that. No, they're testing kits.
On what basis are you going to wonder that? No. You see, in all of this, I am sympathetic to the concern that information is important.
Mm-hmm.
That we, if we know, we are better able to brace ourselves.
True.
And to protect ourselves. I also know this.
Mm-hmm.
And I've functioned in the media for many years. I know that public servants in general are very reluctant to share information with the public in general. And I sincerely hope that those who have responsibility for this area would appreciate the fact that if you do not share information with the public, there's always that possibility that that information is going to get out anyhow and can be twisted in various ways, and has been said time and time again, when a lie gets a head start, the truth has real difficulty keeping up with it or catching up with it. So I think that it must also be recognized that there are people at various levels, various stakeholders, who are raising questions about some of the information that has been put out. And those who are responsible, and I must tell you, I think that there is a significant role for the chief medical officer and his medical team to be more involved in making sure that they come to face the public on the issues. It is one thing to put the Minister of Health. But the Minister of Health can only go so far. He is not a doctor. You know? Having said that, I really think this is a teaching moment for the country as a whole. We can go on so many other websites and get information about how countries are dealing with patients and that sort of thing. A simple thing in Barbados. So we've got recoveries. So how have we been able to do it? Why is that something that we can't know? You know, we're part of the whole discussion about hydroxychloroquine and what President Trump was proposing and that sort of thing. We have been part of the discussion about Cuban interferon and all of that. Good grief. Why is that secret? Why, you know, it is... To me, these are opportunities for people to learn and for people to grow. But there may well be those who believe that we can't handle it. That if you give the people the information, they can panic. You know? And they may be right, but they may also be wrong. The people in this country have shown a lot of maturity. But if you've been brought up in a culture of secrecy and mystique, I don't expect it to change overnight. Very difficult. But let's bear in mind that we can learn a lot from this. Dr. Brass Sachs, hello.
Hello, good morning.
Good morning.
Morning, David. I just want to ask a question. Mm-hmm. I want to know if I'm living in Barbados and I am a foreigner and I think that I have COVID, I'm having the fear of not calling because I can be deported. How do I go about doing?
I really can't answer the question. That question,
okay.
I would have to ask somebody for you, because at the root of it is the fear of being deported. So that is what is going to cause you to be reluctant. I think we have enough hotlines around the place already. The government has already put those in place so that you ought to have some idea. And if you don't, then you can ask a question as to whom you call. What you want to find out is, how is the government going to treat you once they recognize that you have been here illegally? Now, everything depends upon your specific circumstances, I would believe. I mean, how long you've been here, where they have children that were born here. They would have to investigate that and then make a determination on the basis of the facts before them. But it is a very dangerous thing if you believe that you've got COVID to stay away from treatment. I believe that the government of Barbados did make a statement very early on indicating that people in that situation would be treated and should not be fearful. That was said very early on. I mean, let's be realistic. We're getting information overload right now when it comes to COVID. I mean, there are so many things that have been said and you can't even remember all of them. But I do recall that one.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, good. Down to brass tacks. Hello.
Hello, good morning, Miss Ellis.
Yes, morning.
You were right to a certain extent because the Mr. Instant did make the point that people that who are here illegal, they will not be deported. But let me go on to my other points, really. I want to tell Raw that the jury still looked on whether or not the Acting Prime Minister, Mr. Richard Carter, and the Minister of Health is doing that tremendous job. And the other thing, Mr. Ellis, though, this, you will find this one fascinating. If you have workers that are tested, and the gentleman was right when the question was asked to the Minister of Health, and he says it's a confidential matter, and he will not be going into it on the press conference which was held last Saturday, guys, sat down home and listened to it. But you think I'm going to ask you, no. Let's draw this scenario. You have an old aunt, and you have the workers for the national assistant worker will come and clean the place 2 or 3 days a week. Now, due to the fact that a lot of them were tested positive.
A lot of whom?
The workers.
Which workers were tested positive?
Pardon me?
Workers?
Negative. Sorry about that. I missed it. A lot of the industrial assistant workers were tested negative. There's only 5 cases that I heard about. But the fact remains is that although a lot of them were tested negative, when they come at your house, that's being a human being, that suspicion of whether or not this person might still be carrying the symptoms, which I've not shown it so far. So you are still, the old people, the elderly people, some of them might still be adult. Now, how do you encourage those?
Okay. There is one stock answer to that particular point.
Uh-huh.
If you see me on the street, even though I don't work with the National Assistance Board, you are supposed to treat me as if I have COVID, and I am supposed to treat you that way.
I agree.
All right? Introducing something that is completely different in process or procedure for people who are cared for by the people at National Assistance Board isn't really necessary.
No.
We are all supposed to be functioning that way today.
Mm. Okay.
So there's nothing special for them.
I see. So in other words, when you have a worker coming home, the elderly is supposed to treat them according to what you say as somebody.
Yes, because if you look at what happened, for instance, in the United States,
uh-huh.
Where there were so many people in the elderly, the homes for the elderly, who uh-huh. died. They didn't go anywhere, you know.
I know that.
The virus came to them.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, we have to behave the same way. The notion that there is a different regime for different people isn't uh-huh. correct.
Uh-huh.
Assume that everybody has it. Because there's a high percentage of people who show no symptoms, but carry it.
That's agreed. But my other thing is that I have a...
As a matter of fact, I think I should put on a mask no way I'm talking to you.
Don't mind. I was telling... I get as a joke. Hello?
Yes, I'm listening to you.
I say take that as a joke.
Yes, it is.
You are
but no, but we have to treat this thing seriously, right?
So for now, you'll be telling me to get a little Clorox water.
No, I tell you what the president said. Inject yourself with it. Well, you shouldn't do that here. all against the rules.
Oh, thank you.
All right. Have a good day. Down to brass tacks.
Yes, good morning. How are you?
I'm well, and you?
Some time ago, I spoke to you. I told you this, Mr. Abrams, he held a press conference. I actually find the information there.
It was in November of last year.
Yeah, you found it?
Yes,
in December, though.
What I saw was November, but anyhow, it was late last year.
It was in December. When he primarily said that, he brought it up. They said how to rejigger the whole thing, how the government would have saved $20 million because of the whole restructuring or reorganizing the contracts. But, you know, I said to you, he also said that they will look at the desal plants, but not in the present form, because he said that the desal plants project, he said that he will not he will look at it as a solution. He will not rate off as an option to contribute to the water security, but not the egregious contracts and everything that had been signed by the previous administration. But I hear a lot of people are talking, even Mr. Worrell. He keeps saying that he's not dealing with politics, that he lives in the area. I would like to know how long Mr. Webb is living in this area. Because actually during the whole last administration, I never heard him once complain about water shortage. No. And I hear a lot of people saying, I think I hear you saying this as well. You were actually agreeing with some of the callers last weekend that the government was in office long enough that it should be corrected, this one. Now, the government have done things since they have gotten there, actually. They've done several things. But you got to understand, I would like to say, this, like what I was saying, when you had garbage on the streets and the shortage of the garbage trucks, this, similarly, is about a process. Now, the government did things, but you see what happened here with the COVID. The COVID put everything on the back burner. COVID put every single thing on the back burner. They said that BW had done upgrades at the desalination plant on Spring Garden. They installed a number of booster stations. The last one that was installed was down Trent St. James. They had the Vineyard project, which would allow water at Gross and Phillip that are not being utilized to be pumped and St. John and St. Joseph. What is also significant, the last administration, the project, the same one that went to Grove, that was supposed to carry water to St. John and St. Joseph. But it was a project failure. It did not reach the specific goal sent out to carry the water down there. That's why then you had to come then. The foreign minister himself said you had to then come and try to do, you had to look for financing to do the Groves project, right? That was turned, not Groves, but the Vineyard project, that was turned on the water. So it's not a simple case that this administration was sitting on its laurels and refused to do things. This is a process. It is not an event. And they have done things, but the COVID would have put everything in a tailspin. Because the same Vineyard project, that was basically, you know, that would be carrying the water from down growth.
But COVID also makes the access to water all the more important.
Yes.
So somebody was saying to me, look, the government, because of COVID, found money somewhere to go and set up a facility in the north of the country for COVID.
Yes, right.
But you can't find money. This is how the person put it. But you can't find money to deal with the water problem, which has been an urgent matter for so long and becomes all the more urgent because people are expected to wash their hands more regularly.
No.
Let me hear you respond to that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The same manager said, okay, if you listen to the people that are complaining, Andrea, they say water in their pipes, water in their taps. Now, the desalination plant, oh no, you see the same booster that they put down St. James, they have a high salt. You know, when you get into the salty area, they can't pump it anymore. So that's the issue there with the pump. So basically, they got any boosters, but they're really not pushing on the water to the higher elevation because of the salinity in the water. Now, the manager at the BWA saying you're not getting, because all the reservoir are low, so when you get too low, you can't pump it. So they are doing every day the people in St. John's get water not through their taps, but through the tank.
Well, it really is amazing to see that you have opted to become a spokesman for the Barbados Water Authority.
I'm not a spokesman. These are the facts.
Because I would think that the people who are best positioned to speak to this particular matter would be those who work there who could give the details.
What I just said is what they said, you know.
Right.
It's what they said already at different conferences. But the people in Barbados probably need to remember a little bit longer. You know, they had a press conference when they said, when the same people said that in 2019 was Barbados dry, scarcest thing for water since 1947. And so this is nothing new. The water authorities people said that. The water people.
So am I the only person who gets the impression, though, that the strategy for trying to deal with Barbados's water problems today and into the future seems not to have been clearly laid out beyond the talk of the desal plants? Am I missing something here?
Well, the last time I hear you talk about the desal plant, no, the Prime Minister also spoke on an earlier occasion when she said that is the whole policy. You go look at the overall policy. People who say these things, but probably it's...
So why would it take so long, in your judgment, to come up with some kind of policy going forward? And the other question is, having heard that from the Prime Minister, have you seen any follow-through from the relevant ministry?
Yes, the ministry has been working, but you can't get blood out of a stone. You can't get blood out of a stone. Just as when he was preaching, saying, but if you notice, the garbage collection now is very well back to the normal.
Yes, that has improved considerably. There's no doubt about that.
Right, but this is the same thing that we're having here now. Now, you got a double whammy. You got a drought, the worst drought in 72 years. You got high salinity in the reservoirs. So actually, that's going to hamper pumping water. Once it gets down that low,
yes. So therefore, what is the strategy that you have heard outlined for dealing with it?
I outlined some of the strategies there. No. One is that to get water to the people in St. George's and St. John with the Vineyard project. You remember the Prime Minister came. Sometimes they said that they were paying the $500 million monthly to get $3 million daily for water, but they're only getting half of the water. So this whole idea, with the one up grows in St. Philip, they're only getting half of the water. So the Vineyard project will take the same other half that is not being utilized and send on.
Sir, I want to suggest to you, though, that a strategy cannot rely upon the government alone. The strategy must also reach out to the public of Barbados. Now, I understand what the minister says about the costs associated with the water problem to the Barbados Water Authority. But what I don't sense is enough of a push towards the public, a push that essentially encourages the retrofitting, because that is necessary. People need to be educated too about the best way of going about that. There needs to be an overall encouragement of Barbadians to find ways and means and to identify different techniques that can be used. I know that some people, for instance, have gone the way of putting in faucets that are timed so that you put your hand under the faucet, water comes, and as soon as you withdraw your hand, the water stops. Now, some of those don't work well. That's the truth. There's some argument that the calcium in the water is causing a problem. And as a result, they choke these systems very, very quickly. So I say to you that all of that is part of what we need to be discussing, we need to be hearing from people who are specialists in these areas. And working hand in hand, the private sector working with government. But the push has got to be towards more of us, members of the public, trying to adjust the way that we do things. How easy is it to talk about trying to take water off your roof right now? And then another part of this is the rip-off mentality that some people got, which means that sometimes you call somebody to do a job for you, and the next thing you know, more often than not, the job is not well done. Sometimes they take half the money and then they don't come back. And so all of that is part of the discussion that we need to have as we try to fight the water resource crisis. That's my view. So when I say I don't hear a comprehensive approach to it, that to me is what is missing in all of this. Somebody needs to sit down and come up with a well-planned paper that does reach out to, let's say, within the social partnership and stuff, because it is so important. We don't know when next we're going to end up with another crisis similar to this one here, so with COVID-19, you know. Down to brass tacks. Hello.
Hello, good morning.
Yes.
Good morning, Mr. Ellis. I have a concern is about NIS. If you are on unemployment and your workplace has called you and say that you will have to go on vacation, I want to know what is the procedure for going on for you normally be on unemployment and suddenly they say that you have to go on vacation.
Well, I know workers have been given the choice of taking the vacation or going home and having to depend on NIS based on the green paper that they give you.
Yes.
Basically, you are unemployed. So it's a difficult period, and you have to determine for yourself whether you're going to take the chance of going out there without a job in circumstances where it is very, very difficult to determine what is going to happen next. I understand and appreciate the difficulties that many of you are facing when it comes to that kind of choice, but I've heard the argument from the other side as well, which is no money is coming in to pay people. Where are we going to get the money from? You know, and this is on top of how many years now of hardship for people who have been running companies. I suspect that after this situation, even before it ends, there are some people who are going to close their doors forever, because how can they sustain all these blows that they've had to take for so many years? And now culminating with this, it really is a difficult situation. How do you see it?
But Mr. Ellis, they already put me on the plan to get an employment.
Yes.
So Now they said, but I was home for over 5 weeks now.
Yes.
So I have received my unemployment for a couple of days now. So they told me now to go on vacation, which my vacation will only last a few weeks.
Yes.
And then I will be going back again on the employment, which I think that they give us like a 3 month grace period. So why they don't stick on the 3 months, and then after the 3 months, then decide what will go forward.
They specifically gave you the impression that you would be getting the unemployment benefit for 3 months?
Yes, they leave it open because they said on because of the COVID.
Yes, so they left it open.
Yes, it open.
Leaving it open does not mean that they've given you a 3 month period.
Okay.
It may be your interpretation. If you say they left it open, it does not necessarily mean for 3 months. What their scenario is that when we started this emergency situation, we were in uncertain waters.
Okay.
And therefore, we have had the emergency, the state of emergency, with the curfew and all of that. We've had it extended from mid-April to the 3rd of May, and now a proclamation has also been extended down to June 30th. So this, to my mind, is going to create a lot of problems for employers and employees. Those people who were off in the early stages of the emergency are now faced with a situation where they are likely to be asked to stay home longer because there isn't as much work to be done. And this is all part of why there's another movement out there saying, start the work back. You know, the economy can't sustain this. So the choice now is between public health or the economic health of the country. So I understand your situation, and I would suggest to you for guidance on this, that perhaps you need to speak to somebody in the Labor Department so that they could tell you better how we could advise you and possibly your employer as to how best you can go around this particular problem.
Okay then, thank you.
All right, you're welcome. Down to brass tacks, hello.
Good morning, David.
Yes, good morning, Glenn.
It's Glenn, how are you, sir?
I'm okay.
Good. You are still very much in the journalism field. I still, even though I'm not practicing journalist, I still consider myself a journalist.
Mm-hmm.
But my experience has been that I've retained those characteristics that were sharpened and developed in journalism to listen, to analyze, to edit content for syntax. All those things help to make you understand what a speech or a document better. So everything I listen and read or hear, I always apply those same principles to it. And in that context, then, I'd like to make a few comments on Saturday's press conference on COVID-19.
Yeah.
First of all, I'd like to commend Minister Ford for having a written speech, which, you know, a written speech gives structure and form and discipline to what you're saying. And in that context, it was a speech which was done in a classic form where you have a major point which you state, that major point you repeat, and at the end you rehash it again to make sure that the repetition and has leads to reinforcement and retention of the message being given. I thought that was I have not seen that done in a long, long time on many occasions in the present proper parliamentarians. We seem to like to improvise or speak from the head, and even though they might have talking points, they make up as they go along. And therefore, as you know, syntax is important to the understanding of a statement. If syntax is right, if the words are not put in a particular structure and sequence to give a meaning, you can have problems. But that also, in that regard, I also want to pick up on something you raised. Now, or you hinted at or alluded to the fact that for that press conference, there was nobody with a scientific background. No doctor, no epidemiologist, like I've been called out for a long time. So what you had were three ministers, giving three political presentations, because they represent the government, they're politicians, they're practicing, they're implementing policy. But you have three politicians speaking, and it meant that the questions that I would like to have answered were not able to, because they were not even able to answer some of the questions from the journalists who themselves, who in the venture into scientific areas or medical areas, were told
questions such as.
Well, there was one where Minister Bostic was being asked about, I think it was the testing the numbers, and he said he'd have to get another medical problem. He'll have to defer to the doctors for that answer. But what I'm saying is that I think that at this stage of the crisis, we need to have those persons at least one person with a medical or scientific background at every press conference to deal with issues which journalists should ask about if they follow the language and follow the statement. There should be questions arising each time to raise these questions. And I feel that the every opportunity should be given live and direct for the question to be answered. It doesn't all have to be a minister, it should at least the chief medical officer or the epidemiologist who seem to be working anonymously or have not been exposed to the public, where we can get answers beyond what is stated up front. And I also think that, for example, I'd like to deal with the journalist. The acting prime minister made a statement which she talked about. She said words to the effect, I think I almost got it correct, a worrisome scenario is emerging. But nobody asked her to explain that, to expand on what does she mean by that, what does that imply whatsoever. And I thought that was something. When the acting prime minister, in a context that I talked about, a worrisome scenario emerging, I think the alarm bell should go off here. What do you mean? I want to know more. Give me context. And therefore, I'm saying that these press conferences need to be, these press briefings, because I think there seems to be a distinction between a press briefing and a press conference. These press briefings should have personnel who could deal with matters of that nature and explain things properly to the person. I don't think it could just be left for three. I think it was a mistake to have only three political figures dealing with the issue. No matter what. I think because of the complexity of the nature, because the integral part of the scientists and medicine in this whole crisis, I think we need to have those personnel on hand every occasion to explain things that the colleague ministers and etc. are briefed by other people. So they can only go on the basis of their briefing. You need more extensive, expert, deep knowledge that the nuances of the situation can be explained to give the person a better context. We see it happen on CNN and every day. We so Barbadians are accustomed to following that kind of trend. We, the Barbadian public, can handle it. And therefore, even with the context of the saying that they're going to intensify the testing for community spread, I think that needs to be explained. What do you mean by community spread? How will it be? How will it be exercised so that the public gets accustomed to it? Because Barbadians are very, very fearful of this, and they want to be sure that when it is done, that they understand the context, and it has to educate the public and eradicate possibility of prejudice and aversion to person just because they've been tested or is known to be tested, etc. I just think that needs to be brought up more and more, not just the strict information, but these things have to be experienced, how they will be operationalized and taken to the public, administered to the public, so the public can get accustomed, know what to expect if they're ever involved or whatnot.
Okay, well, thank you very much. Somebody here believes that you're spot on. The questions sound like the reporters are just gathering a few stats for articles, says that writer. Are the reporters barred from asking hard-hitting questions of the government? You know, whenever reporters are put in this kind of arena in this country and elsewhere, they are often under great scrutiny, or we are often under great scrutiny, and I believe a similar thing has happened over the weekend. So both sides, both those who are giving the news conferences and those who are asking the questions, are expected to deliver to a certain level.